Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World episode 119. I am your host John Jordan and joining me today is David Kim, who is the head of games publishing at Tyranno Studios. How's it going, David?
It's great. How are you doing?
Good, good. So we've got plenty to talk about. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on, we're not going to start with who is Tyranno Studios, because that won't be known to many people. We'll go into a little bit about a rebrand that's happened there. But let's first find out about David Kim a bit more. So can you tell us a bit of a potted history, how you got into games and how you got into blockchain?
Yeah, so I'm a 20-year game industry veteran. I've worked in traditional sort of console PC publishing. I've worked at movie studios overseeing their games businesses. Mm-hmm. And then most recently, I've been working here in the Web3 blockchain connected gaming space with Tyranno Studios, which was formerly called Wax Studios.
Yes, yes, that's the rebrand. Was the sort of movement from sort of Web2 games, as I guess we now have to call them, to Web3 games, was that sort of a fairly smooth one for you? Because people have seemed to go through sort of different transitions. Some people just sort of, maybe like me, just sort of just get it and all pile in. Other people have to sort of think about it for a bit. Was there any sort of thinking involved, or did it seem very obvious to you?
I mean, you know, the interesting thing I always tell people who have not tried to do anything with blockchain is, especially coming from the game space, right? Everybody assumes, well, it's all computers, it's all computer code. It should, be easily understandable from, one to the other. And it's not. Yeah. They're just so radically different in the way that they're designed to operate that, just because you're very, very knowledgeable about game development and coding for games does not make you particularly knowledgeable about blockchain development and coding for blockchain smart contracts and vice versa. So... Yeah. It took me quite a while to really understand blockchain and what the potential of blockchain is. Mm-hmm. It was a process that really started while I was at Sony Pictures, overseeing the games business. I was also responsible for overseeing anything that was, starting to percolate up with regards to NFTs and blockchain.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. At first, honestly, like during the time when everything was happening on Ethereum, I wasn't really particularly interested in the space. It didn't seem like there was a lot of potential. And then I started talking with the team at Wax Studios when they approached me about licensing some IPs for NFTs, and started learning about how Wax works and how it's different from what Ethereum was at the time and what Ethereum still is in many ways. Having a 3-hour discussion with the CTO where I was just giving him the Socratic method and just asking him every single question that would come into my mind to try and fully understand how Wax works and what its potential was. I saw, huge potential in Wax that wasn't there on Ethereum really, because again, of the way it works, and huge potential for gaming. Cool. And that's why I'm here.
Good, good. Okay. So let's talk a bit. I mean, you sort of mentioned it there. Sort of structuring the discussion of sort of Wax and Ethereum, and obviously, there are now at least a dozen or so sort of blockchains out there where you could sort of games are running. Wax was one of the sort of early ones with games. But for people who don't know about Wax, do you want to give a bit of a sort of potted explanation of Wax and why it is different and how to the Ethereum and other chains it is.
Yeah, so Wax blockchain originally was started in 2017, was when they started the development. It became fully operational in 2019. That kind of makes it an OG chain. So there's essentially chains that were developed pre-2019 and then chains that were developed post-2019. So the ones that are post-2019 that most people are familiar with are things like, Polygon and Solana and all those. But Wax is a little bit of an OG chain, and it's different from most other chains. First of all, it uses proof of stake, but it uses a form of proof of stake called delegated proof of stake. That means that it's actually faster and more energy efficient than traditional proof of stake, as most people understand it. And that actually is a huge advantage when it comes to gaming, because it has pretty much the highest transaction capacity, certainly in terms of actual, daily transactions that are processed. And it also has, one of the fastest times to finality. And for people to understand what that means, is time to finality is how long it takes for the blockchain to actually execute and confirm that a transaction has been executed. And when you're talking about playing a game, like right now on Ethereum, after the merge, time to finality is 30 minutes. Because if you want to do something that has to be confirmed by the chain in a game, you have to wait 30 minutes of lag before you can do it. With Wax, you have, sub 3 second times to finality. So it's really important, I think, for, user experience. The other thing about delegate proof of stake is that it is, the most energy efficient, protocol that you can use for blockchains, or architecture that you can use for blockchains. So, Wax blockchain only produces about 110 tons of carbon a year, and that's the equivalent of maybe about five individual Americans, or about a household and a half. And that's despite the fact that Wax processes more transactions than any other blockchain every day. Many days it processes more transactions than all other blockchains combined. There's a lot of what I would call user experience benefits from those factors. And that was one of the things when I sort of saw the potential of blockchain, through Wax, that was one of the reasons.
Cool. Good. Okay, so we mentioned a little bit about we mentioned Tarana Studios a few times now. That was originally a sort of Wax's sort of in-house studio. I think it's called Wax Studios or Wax Game Studios, but you sort of rebranded about a month or so, not quite a month ago. So can you talk a little bit about why you've done that sort of rebrand, and sort of the philosophy that sort of comes along? You're not just rebranded for the sake of it. There's a thought
Oh,
behind
correct. Yeah. So
it.
the first thing to understand is that Wax Studios has always been separate from Wax Blockchain. As an OG chain, Wax Blockchain, like Ethereum, nobody owns it, nobody controls it. There is no central sort of body that the way you see with a lot of these more recent chains. And the thing is, though, if you think about a blockchain in and of itself isn't very useful to most people, just like the internet in and of itself isn't useful to most people. It's the products and services that you build on top of it that make it useful. So the founders of Wax Blockchain understood that, there needed to be services and products for people to be able to utilize a chain. In order to help facilitate development of those services and products, they started essentially what is Wax Studios. Wax Studios is actually not directly involved in the operation of Wax Blockchain. We are not a validator, or we do not run nodes. So we don't really directly financially benefit from Wax Blockchain. We financially benefit from the products and services that we create. So, we created the main wallet that is used on Wax. We have a marketplace that operates on Wax. We have games that we are putting out on Wax. But at the same time, again, we're not, as a company, beholden to Wax. We don't have a mandate that everything must be exclusive to Wax. And as we've been working on our games and our products and services, and we've been watching the development of gaming on blockchain, what we're seeing is that the future is going to be multi-chain. Because initially, the people who were coming into blockchain were coming in essentially as like interest in a specific chain, right? It was chain first, it was the token first. The products were really secondary in terms of their interest. As blockchains become more mainstream, and use of blockchain has become, I think, more varied and diversified from just, crypto finance and collectible NFTs, and to gaming, what we're finding is that people's first priority is what is the actual experience I'm being delivered, rather than what is the blockchain that it's on. So, it's kind of like my analogy is it's like going multi-chain, or sorry, multi-platform with a game, right? You want people to be able to experience your games on as many platforms as possible without having to, it's like if somebody has to buy a new console to play your game that they don't already own, that's probably going to reduce the chances they're going to play your game. So we want our games to be played by as many people as possible. And our perspective is that the best way to do that is to eliminate the friction that forcing people to use a specific blockchain creates. With our games, we always, kind of launch initially on Wax up to now, but our plan is to support cross-chain. So, the assets, the in-game assets can be bought and sold on other chains. Of course, when we're called Wax Studios, people would often conflate us with Wax Blockchain and think that, that we were like first party, like almost like being like Sony first party or Microsoft first party, which we weren't. So, we changed our name to Tyranno so that people understood and would place focus on our games and products first and not so much what chain we're building on, because we're going to be building on more than one.
Yeah, it's just sort of tidying up the sort of the optics around that. So makes sense. So let's talk about the games. That's sort of the point of what we're here for, rather than the blockchain stuff. Blockchain Brawlers is I guess your, I mean, the game that is live and has been live for the sort of longest time and is I guess your sort of signature game at the moment. So, can you tell us a little bit about, I guess maybe something in the title might give it away, but what's Blockchain Brawlers and, how where is it in its sort of development process? Because I mean, even though it's live, there's always sort of new features coming down the line, and where are you, where are you going with it?
Yeah, so that Blockchain Brawlers was our first game. Like many games nowadays, it's not a you kind of make it, release it, and then it's set. It's very much a live ops situation. So, we've had several phases of the game. So we had what we were called the mining phase, where players could go in and mine the two sort of in-game currencies, if you will, one which is a fungible token, represented as a fungible token, one which is represented as NFTs. Part of the reason we did that was because we do not do ICOs to raise funds and distribute tokens through that methodology. We want our tokens to be earned by the players. So that mining phase was the phase in which players were earning the tokens, which then is actually the supply of in-game currency that you need to play what we're about to release, which is the PvP mode in the game. And the PvP mode was the core gameplay in the PvP mode was designed by Richard Garfield, who was the creator of Magic: The Gathering. We had met with Richard about a bunch of other things. He'd actually we'd been reached out to actually by one of his representatives about potential interest in stuff that Richard has done. When we had a conversation with him, he mentioned that he had this game that he had designed. It wasn't designed for anybody. It was just an idea that he had that he really loved. But there was nobody who had really kind of taken on interest in sort of publishing it up to that point. So, he shared the design with us. We played a gray box, really, really rough prototype, but it was still so much fun. And we were like, this is great. This absolutely makes sense. We love this game. We think it's fantastic, and it works with sort of what our game is, which is a professional wrestling themed game. We've been working on development of that PvP mode. It's just about ready to launch. We're looking at a launch towards the end of October. We currently have a open beta going on, where you can play sort of the core game. You don't have access to the NFT and token related components in the PvP mode yet, but if you want, you can just go and play the PvP mode and give it a try and learn how to play the game so that you'll be ready when it's fully launched.
And it is, for people who haven't seen it is a sort of quite bright, colorful, almost sort of I don't know, a sort of goofy sort of aspect of wrestling. Is that sort of
Yeah,
slightly over the top sort of pro wrestling sort of thing, isn't it?
yeah, exactly. It's professional wrestling. Think about it if like, when you're a kid and you have wrestling figures, right? And your action figures and you're kind of, pretending to do matches with the action figures. It's kind of that sort of visual aesthetic. It's very, very over the top. It's very goofy, almost in like a like maybe a robot chicken or if you're old enough, celebrity death match kind of way.
And going back to sort of your sort of talking about sort of why you're rebranding Toronto Studios and this sort of multi-chain thing. You actually have a multi-chain thing now going on with blockchain brawlers as well. So you sort of you have the first sort of iteration of that. So because I find it interesting because there have been a whole bunch of sort of projects that have been on, specific blockchains, really their own blockchains. So like Splinterlands is one example, and Blanco's. And over time, they also sort of have these. They choose to have assets on Ethereum as well, because obviously Ethereum is where a lot of the sort of collecting sort of volume and trading is. So can you talk a little bit about the what you're doing on Ethereum, which is part of blockchain brawlers? Even though the game runs on Wax, you're having NFTs being minted on Ethereum and
Correct.
then move them around. So.
So we want, again, what we want is we want people to be able to buy and sell their assets and NFTs on whatever chain is most, comfortable for them, right? Or most familiar for them. Obviously you can do it on Wax. The next chain that we're expanding to is Ethereum. And so we've started doing sales on Ethereum. You can actually bridge over any blockchain brawler's NFT from Wax to Ethereum and vice versa. Through a bridge that we have already built and operating. You can also transfer assets to Binance Smart Chain if you want through a bridge we have for Binance as well. And so you can, you can, take your NFT and sell it anywhere. We're also, doing initial sales of NFTs on these other chains to try and get more of their communities, directly involved. So we did sales of brawler NFTs, character NFTs, on Binance when we were first launching the game. We're currently doing sale of what we call Brawlyceums on Ethereum. A Brawlyceum is kind of an interesting thing. It's not an in-game item specifically. A lot of people equate it with land, but it's not really land either. It's kind of an entirely new concept that we've come up with for blockchain connected games. We're calling it sort of a minting pass. And if you think about sort of what's been going on in blockchain gaming to date, the idea is that players primarily create the assets that are needed to play the game, and then they sell them to other players who need them to be able to come in and start playing the game. It's what Axie Infinity did. It's what most games have done up to now. There's a fundamental flaw to that that everybody's now kind of figured out, which is that when everybody can start manufacturing items, initially you have a shortage and the price goes super high, which then incentivizes more people to come in and start crafting more items. But eventually, when everybody is crafting, it results in a situation where oversupply becomes a problem. And then once oversupply happens, the economy crashes, and that's the end of it. Like, you can never recover from oversupply, really. But in a traditional game, right, you're buying directly from the game operator, and that means that they can control how much supply there is of digital items. With blockchain brawlers and with the Brawlyceums, what we kind of did was we said, look, we don't want to be the ones controlling supply. We want to have it, done by the player community. But we also can't have every player who plays the game crafting and minting new items as part of the gameplay process. So we created a separate sort of crafting game where people, kind of make decisions, and it's a very complex sort of leveling up system where you have to make decisions about what you want to do at a given time to maximize the odds of producing the thing that you want to produce. And in order to play this mode, you have to have a Brawlyceum. There's only 1,100 Brawlyceums total. And so therefore, only a maximum of 1,100 people can play this crafting game at any one given time. And so regardless of how many people are playing PvP, the number of people who can, craft and supply the items they need is like 1,100. So
So it's
that's how we're trying to address the oversupply issue.
So that's interesting. So almost that becomes sort of part of the game as the price of the Brawlyceum sort of rises and falls depending on, they're another part of the economy really, but there's it's there's a fixed supply and people who own them decide what they want to do with them at any one period of time. So you sort of I guess you sort of constrain the sort of boom bust cycle because these people have this extra lever that they can sort of use. Yeah,
exactly.
Cool. Good. And so, I mean, I think looking at the numbers, I think Blockchain Brawl is one of the biggest games on Wax, if not the biggest game. Do you, obviously, you know, it's not as big as you would want it to be. PvP is obviously a massive thing because that's sort of the main mode for every sort of game type. You know, PvP is its sort of main mode, certainly in terms of driving the sort of the most engaged players. So, you know, do you see with Blockchain Brawlers sort of up to now, you've sort of been in the sort of the early launch phase, and it's sort of PvP is really where you expect the sort of the sort of growth to happen and people to get interested because that is sort of the core bit of the game, or is it? Have you seen any sort of early signs of that, or is it still a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, let's be honest. The mining phase game is not for most people who are interested in gaming, right? It's very much a very crypto native centric type of game. You know, it's not something that was going to appeal to a mass market gamer. The PvP mode absolutely will. It is, you know, if you go to. I'll have to get you the link so you can post it in whatever description you have for this particular episode. But you go in and you play it, and it's a traditional game. You know, right now in the open beta, you go in. There's no crypto elements. You just go in and you play the game, so you can see how the mechanics work. And like I said, when we first saw it, we loved it. We thought it was super fun. Since we've been doing the beta, even though you can't earn anything, right? And you're just playing for fun, the retention metrics and engagement metrics in the beta have just been huge. So we think this is a game that works for traditional gamers. But we're also realized that the one thing you need to do if you're going to get traditional gamers to play a blockchain game is you have to reduce all the friction that normally exists with the blockchain elements. So we've done a lot of really innovative things with our game to help reduce that friction. So first of all, you know, obviously there's the Wax Cloud wallet, which is the primary sign-in. And, you know, creating a Wax Cloud wallet account is the same as creating an account on any other website, right? You just kind of username, password, or use a social login, and you can create an account right away. Once you're in the game, you know, we've done some things. Like, for instance, we have... you know, a lot of games, if people want to buy and sell items with each other, they have to go to a secondary market that's outside the game, right? And that's extra friction. So we created a widget that allows us to actually have an external market, the external secondary market that we operate, be visible in the game as the in-game market. So, you know, there's a tab that says, you know, Brawl Mall, you hit that, and then you see the marketplace, and you can just click and buy directly from, you know, the secondary marketplace using your in-game currency. So that's, you know, again, reducing friction. We're going to also have, you know, people will still need to, you know, like just like with traditional free-to-play games, you know, people buy currency with in-game currency with credit cards. People also buy in-game items with credit cards. We're going to be implementing a credit card purchase option for people to buy in-game currency as well as, you know, the NFT items directly with a credit card. You know, the idea is to try and make it as easy to play these games as it is to play a traditional sort of mobile game, right? You know, or any sort of traditional game with IAP. You know, get sort of hide as much of the really blockchain-esque elements as possible and just give people the main benefit of having your in-game items on a blockchain, which is the ability to buy and sell it with other players.
I think that is the sort of the you know the most obvious thing. I think a lot of gamers have views on NFTs and without really understanding quite what NFTs are. And I think once they are educated or educate themselves in the fact that basically all NFTs are in-game items that they can buy and sell, I think a lot of those sort of problems goes away. And then I think very quickly you get to the stage where they sort of demand or they don't demand, but they. When they're playing games, a game has to be really good for them to play it if they're not owning the stuff. I mean,
not
going to stop playing Call of Duty, but, you know, a lot of other games are just like, well, if they don't own the stuff.
But here's the thing is, ironically, a lot of traditional gamers are already demanding this. And the way you, and they've been demanding it for 20 years. I mean, the way you know that is when you go to play an MMO, right? Or, you know, you play, you know, like Counter-Strike, right? There's robust secondary gray markets for players to trade in-game items, right? I mean, you know, it's been going on for 20 years. I mean, I've spoken with some people who operated, you know, some of the biggest MMOs in the world, like RuneScape and EverQuest and World of Warcraft, and the ones that have done studies on the secondary market, the gray markets that, that form around them, a lot of them have calculated that that gray market is actually 1 to 3 times the size of the in-game economy. You know, so people want to do this, and they're willing to do really, really risky things to do it, right? I mean, you know, you basically are trusting that somebody who you give money to is going to meet you in the game and actually deliver the item that they promised you. You know, and what NFTs allow is for you to do all this in a very trustless manner. You know, there's also other issues, you know, technical and legal as to why, you know, NFTs are a good solution to this problem. It gets a little esoteric, and certainly most players don't understand it. A lot of developers don't even understand all the issues involved. But, you know, once you do understand it, it's clear that this is, for right now, the best solution that's available to allow people to buy and sell items with each other, in-game items with each other, and for real money, right? Or for something that can be eventually converted to real money. You know, one of the things I found really interesting was, you know, people, a lot of times people talk about, well, you know, you can just, you know, like Steam allows you to buy and sell items with each other through the community store. But, you know, is it really being able to buy and sell stuff with each other, you know, without restrictions? Because, you know, I don't know if you saw the story recently, but there was a Counter-Strike Go player who had $5 million worth of skins in his account, and Steam banned him. And in the process of banning him, locked his account so that he can't, has no longer has access to any of his digital items anymore. You know, like on blockchain, you know, if those items were you know, connected to blockchain and as NFTs, you know, what would happen was, you know, Steam could ban him from Counter-Strike. But they you know, but the items would be in his, you know, in his possession, in his wallet, most likely, which means that he would still own them. And even though he wouldn't be able to use them anymore in the game, he could sell them to other people, you know, instead of just losing it all.
No, I have to say, it's sort of been the one of the weirdest sort of issues for me is how Valve has basically banned NFTs, you know, games with NFTs on Steam. But it's been running the closest thing to an NFT server with CSGO skins for the last 20 years. I mean, it's you kind of all the companies, they should get it and be sort of, you know, enthused for it. But obviously, I guess they get it and see it as a challenge to a very successful business that they've got going. So they see it in exactly the wrong way, even though they fully understand it because they've been exactly operating it for so long. It's very, very sort of bizarre.
Yeah. You know, I'm not certain what their decision process is behind all that, but, you know, they certainly have taken, you know, that position. And ironically, you know, when we were doing the first closed beta, you know, we were using Steam as a development environment for distribution of closed beta the way a lot of, you know, developers do. And even though the game itself had no, you know, the beta build had no blockchain connected elements or NFTs, we still got like an alert from Steam that her account was being locked because the game had was a blockchain or NFT game, even though what we were using it for had none of that.
Weird times. Cool. Okay, so the other thing I wanted to, I mean, you got a few games in development, but the other one that's sort of most furthest along and obviously very different to the Blockchain Brawlers in its sort of thematic presentation at least is Music Mogul. So I thought that would be a good one to have a delve into as well, just because it's sort of so different but tell us about that.
Yeah, obviously one of the things that we're doing is, you know, we're trying to experiment with different designs and models and how to incorporate NFTs into different types of games, right? Yeah. Up to this point, a lot of blockchain games have been very, very similar in terms of, you know, their mechanics and their loops and stuff like that. So, you know, with Blockchain Brawlers, you have a PvP card battle game, essentially. With Music Mogul, it's a competitive management sim. Okay. So if you think of a game like, say, Football Manager, right? Or you think of fantasy sports games, we're experimenting with taking sort of the loops and elements in those games And then adding a an NFT and blockchain based component to it to encourage people to, like play against each other, try and predict which artists in the game are going to be popular at any given time. There's weekly or even daily leaderboards that you're trying to compete on. And the idea is, the other part of it is it's a little bit like also like Hollywood Stock Exchange, right? Where you're trying to predict, like the future of, success of a movie, and you're buying and selling essentially shares, quote unquote shares. They're not real shares, right? They're just fictional shares. But in this case, the idea is that, you run a record label. And as a record label, you have an artist roster. But artists, in the real world, and as the way they're submitting our game, their popularity goes up and down, especially when it comes to their positions on the charts. So, the idea is that you're supposed to be trying to manage your label so that you have the highest, chart position scores each week on the leaderboards. And part of the way you do that is just like with fantasy sports, where you have a roster, but then you have this free agent pool where you kind of, drop players and add players, week to week. You kind of want to do the same thing with artists, right? You kind of try to pick up artists that you think you're going to be going up in the future at a low cost on secondary markets, and then sell the ones that maybe are doing really well right now that you think might be declining in the future. You can sell those. And, so it's trying to incorporate a lot of different sort of gameplay mechanics that we know work individually into an experience, and then also adding again this component of you own the assets. And at some point, if you ever want to stop playing or you've lost interest, you can sell the assets.
So, as you sort of mentioned there, a lot of blockchain games at the moment are in very sort of specific sort of genres. I would, you know, they sort of generally, I guess, I would call them sort of hardcore, mid-core sort of genres. This obviously has a strong economic sort of element within it, sort of this sort of trading thing. Obviously, the sort of the framing around it is much more, you would say, sort of mass market appealing, casual. I don't know actually what, is that something that you think that an audience is sort of an audience is ready to sort of take on a game that does have blockchain, even though they're not gonna the blockchain is going to be sort of hidden around the sides? Do you think we're at that stage now where these more sort of casual concepts are going to start to engage sort of audiences, or is it really going to be for the next year or so? It's kind of the hardcore sort of teenage, early 20s sort of male tropes are still going to be the majority.
No, I think what'll happen is, I kind of liken it to what happened when free to play and mobile games really started, right? I mean, it wasn't the traditional gaming audience that was the first to adopt that. It was, in a weird sense, a lot of the traditional gaming artists, the gaming audience is very, very conservative when it comes to gaming, right? They don't like change. And it's people who are less sort of immersed in that particular space who are a little bit more open. The ones who aren't like don't have strong opinions about things, ironically, are the ones who are just sort of saying, look, I just want a fun experience, right? If you deliver me a fun experience that's not full of friction and I enjoy it, then I'm going to engage with it. And that's what you saw. And it obviously greatly expanded the gaming audience, mobile and free to play. We think that similar things will happen with blockchain connected games, that a lot of the same people I think who got into free to play and mobile, if you present them a good blockchain gaming experience, they'll and I wouldn't say it's blockchain gaming. I would say it's blockchain connected gaming, right? So you're still making a game. You're still running 90% of the operations in a way similar to traditional games. It's just you're adding this element of people being able to own and buy and sell their in-game items as NFTs. So yeah, we think if we make great experiences, I mean, there's going to be some, hardcore element that is going to be very anti-NFT until they, however, come around to it. I always liken it to the whole, the outrage there was around horse armor, if you remember that when it was first launched, and now things similar to horse armor and buying in-game, costumes or skins is very well accepted by the traditional gaming community for the most part. So we think that'll happen. We think it'll get there. And it's going to get there because what's going to happen is, and you're just starting to see with us long term. We think most games will have some blockchain connected ownership of in-game items as part of their operation. It's just going to be another method of monetization,
exactly.
Just like microtransactions were added even to premium price games. But this one particularly benefits players because it's the players who have the ability to monetize a bit and not be monetized. What will eventually happen is that you'll have games that are very familiar to most players will have an element. People decide whether to play a game based on what the game is, and then once they're playing the game, they'll then decide whether they want to take advantage of the features that the blockchain offers. Most games, you'll be able to play without dealing with the blockchain stuff if you don't want to. Just the option will be there.
Yeah, I guess it will be. I'm seeing a lot of games now where you have this sort of layering where. It's all, as you're saying now, it's sort of one level you can sort of play it as a free-to-play mobile game without spending anything at all, as you sort of really can. Or you can play it as a free-to-play mobile game and spend within that purchases. And then the next layer is if you either grind a lot or maybe get given an NFT in the game, or you just go out and directly buy an NFT, then there's another whole layer of game which is more about the economy and maybe different modes. And those are all going to live. And people are going to maybe sort of ladder up between the different sort of layers there, but it's all going to be games are going to have all those sort of experiences within them.
Yeah, and it can even be simpler than that. I mean, hey, look at a game like Fortnite, right?
Mm.
They monetize entirely essentially via skins.
Yeah.
But interestingly, a lot of their skins are only available for very limited periods of time.
Mm.
So if you weren't playing the game at that point, you have no option of getting that skin unless you get lucky enough that they make it available for another limited period of time again. Imagine if all those skins were able to be withdrawn from the game as NFTs or actually ownership, because it's not really withdrawing the asset. You're just getting a key that unlocks the asset to whoever holds it. Imagine if players could just take their skins and sell them to other players as NFTs. People who weren't playing at a time when a particular skin was available but really wants it, it gives them an option of getting it.
Mm.
And that's real simple. It's not a complex implementation. It's just allowing people to trade items.
Good. And on that note of simplicity, which is not often where we go with blockchain games, I'll say thank you very much, David, for your time. That was a really good explanation of the product you're doing and more generally the philosophy which you are looking at the sector.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on. Always wonderful to talk with people about this stuff. I definitely feel I'm an evangelist for this, and one of the things I really want to do is I want to educate and help people get over their misconceptions about what blockchain connected gaming is.
Cool. Good. And we'll make sure we get a link to Blockchain Brawlers and the PvP stuff that's coming in a few weeks' time as well, so people can go and check that out. But thank you, David, and thank you to you for watching, listening, depending on how you're consuming the podcast. Remember, every episode we're talking to the people who are building out this sort of brave new world of gaming, mixing up with blockchain and ownership and tokens and economics and all this sort of crazy stuff. And I think the interesting thing is sort of everyone has their own slightly different take on it. I don't think anyone knows exactly how it's all going to play out, so there's plenty of creativity being shown. So hopefully you are being educated as well by listening to the podcast. So please subscribe and come back next time.